You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Want us to go to Zimbabwe now, because we've been talking a lot over the last couple of weeks about the arrest of award-winning Zimbabwean investigative journalist Hopewell Chinono. He was released on bail last week from the country's maximum security prison, and he spent weeks in jail and was accused of inciting violence. So let's bring him on now, who joins us via Skype, live to us from Zimbabwe. Hopewell, good morning. Thank you so much for making time to chat to us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
How are you doing? You've been out on bail for a couple of days now. How are you doing?
I feel much better now. I had a very nasty fever a couple of days before I was given bail. And so I've been recovering from home, but I feel much better than when I came out of prison.
Mm. How were you treated while you were in custody? What were the conditions? I spoke to Zimbabwean lawyer and activist Fazai Mahere a couple of weeks ago. She was also arrested, and she described inhumane conditions. She says she was in a cell that was overflowing with urine, you know, no access to water. What was your experience?
It was similar experience, if not worse, because I was living in a cell meant for 16 people, but we were about 42 people living in that cell. We were in that cell for 17 hours, from about 3 p.m. To the next day, and there was no running water in the cell. There's only one open toilet. And there is an unwritten rule that you can't use it, because once you use it, the whole place becomes very foul. There is no soap for prisoners. The government has failed to provide soap to prisoners. So there's no water, there's no soap. Prisoners are packed like sardines. There's no social distancing. Prisoners have no masks, so there's an outbreak of COVID, and the prison hospital does not have any medication to deal with issues like, say, for instance, when someone has got COVID and they're coughing, there's no coughing medication. There's no paracetamol. There's absolutely nothing. It's a hellhole. It's like a Nazi concentration camp.
Mm. What do you think the purpose of that experience was? I mean, what message do you think they were trying to send out? Because I believe they know very well what the conditions are. And as part of sending those that speak out against government to the cells, they are trying to do something, and they're trying to send them a message.
The idea is to try and instill the fear of God, not only in myself as an investigative journalist, but also to other journalists, especially the young ones, that if you write about the president and his family, and other high ranking government officials, this is how we're going to punish you. We will send you to prison, and we'll make sure that you rot there. If it wasn't for the international support and solidarity that I got, especially from Zimbabweans and South Africans, I would still be there. That was the idea. My arrest was directed from Emmerson Mnangagwa's office. It was being dealt with by his nephew called Thabane Mpofu, who is a special prosecutor for corruption, although he's being used to go after human rights activists and government critics and political opponents of the president.
Mm. I mean, you were facing charges of inciting violence, but there are developments that had happened in the lead up to your arrest. You exposed the COVID-19 medical supply scandal involving the health minister. Was there ever an acknowledgement that you were actually arrested because you exposed the COVID-19 corruption and not so much your tweets about the anti-government protests?
Yeah, the whole world knew and knows that I was arrested because of the corruption exposures. Even the police men at the police station, you know, they would privately tell me that, you know, you are being incarcerated because of the exposures. The president is upset that you have tarnished his name and that of his family. It was a well-known fact that that's the reason why I was I was arrested. I had been warned through a press conference by the spokesperson for ZANU-PF, which is the ruling party. Patrick Chinamasa held a press conference saying that I was tarnishing the name of the president's family and I should stop that. What it meant is that I should stop exposing the corruption that I was putting out, and that had become a big issue in Zimbabwe, leading to the firing of the health minister.
Mm. And remind us of what you exposed there. What was the involvement of the health minister? It's very shocking, just like even here at home, that, you know, you've got, you know, countries, developing countries like ours, where, you know, we don't have, you know, the resources in abundance or the money to even throw around in terms of relief package. But you've got ministers and those people in power, you know, working behind the scenes to try and see how they can benefit from this pandemic. What was the involvement of the health minister? Remind us of the corruption that you had picked up during your investigation.
In our case in Zimbabwe, the government officials, they set up shelf companies that did not exist. Some were based in South Africa, some were based in Namibia, some were based in Dubai, and another one was based in Hungary. Mm. They had never, ever, the companies did not exist. They were just there in shelf form. So, for instance, the Namibian one, it was being run by somebody who's close to the Mnangagwa family. Mm. And when I raised that issue, the Mnangagwa family issued a letter saying that they were not associated to these people who had set up the shelf companies. Mm. And then one of the shelf companies issued a letter similarly saying that they were not linked to the Mnangagwa family in any way. And then when I did text analysis on both letters, I realized that they'd been written by one person. And then I challenged them to that effect, that this is actually one person who has written both letters purporting to be different people, and kept quiet. There was a $60 million fund, which was meant to buy COVID PPE, like masks, all the stuff that was needed for government hospitals and so forth, and prisons as well. And a mask which would cost 68 cents was mugged for $24. So the scandal was about inflating the prices and giving tenders to the boys and girls who are close to those who are in the seat of power. Mm. And the companies that were set up did not exist. For instance, the one which was in Namibia, the Namibians actually helped me to prove that this company had never actually existed, and that it had never paid taxes in Namibia. And yet, here it was getting huge contracts in Zimbabwe. They were buying things from China. One receipt, which I managed to get through my investigations through DHL, they bought something for $380. Mm. And the government of Zimbabwe was billed $68,000. Mm. That was how bad it was. They were stripping the state of resources that are meant for the poorest of the poor. And so when I put that out, you know, they decided that they were going to throw me into prison for as a form of punishment for exposing the looting of public funds.
And when they sent you to jail, I mean, the intention, as you indicated earlier, seems to have been clear, to crush you and silence you. You have now been barred from Twitter, but they haven't succeeded in silencing you, have they?
No, they haven't. What the judge said was that I cannot tweet about violence and I cannot tweet about public protests. I've never tweeted about violence. The charges that were brought before the courts to say that I was inciting violence were trumped up charges. There's no way in the tweets where I talk about violence. It was just an excuse to try and get me into prison. So in a way, the tweet conditions, they don't affect me because I've never wanted to tweet about violence. In fact, I tweet against violence. It is the state, the Zimbabwean state, that uses violence against citizens.
Yeah. What's your message, Hopewell, to other Zimbabweans that are scared to speak out because they fear they will be treated the same way you were treated?
I think the most important message to Zimbabweans and South Africans, because we are sort of intertwined, is that Zimbabwe is rich. Zimbabwe is wealthy. But Zimbabweans are poor. They are always going to South Africa, some risking their lives, you know, crossing through the crocodile-infested Limpopo River, simply because we have a state, we have a government that does not care about its people. We have a government that uses Jake Hammer tactics, throws people into prison when they criticize the bad things that are happening. The looting of public funds, the plundering of national resources is what has made Zimbabweans poor. We have people in South Africa from Zimbabwe who are working as waitresses and waiters, people with university degrees. And that's the reason why we are in this mess, is because of corruption. We have a government that does not follow the rule of law. There is no rule of law in Zimbabwe. So it becomes difficult for investors, even Zimbabwean investors, to want to invest in a country where the government does what it wants. And it has got what we call special purpose magistrates and judges who will rule against citizens and ruling, violating the constitution. So we need to continue speaking out against the looting of public funds. Otherwise, we will continue having a situation like we have now, where we have had, our hospitals have been shut down for the past 3 months. People are dying every day in homes, and it has ceased to be news because we've normalized it.
There are people that want to have a quick chat with you, Hopewell. So please allow me to take some calls on 011-883-0702. Or you can send me a WhatsApp voice note or an SMS. SMS on 31702 and a WhatsApp on 072-702-1702. Duncan, you are calling us from Johannesburg. Hi.
Hi, Clement. How are you?
I'm all right, Duncan. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Thank you. I just wanted to pass on a message to Hopewell. Say, you know, We admire what he's doing, and definitely one of the things that the government is going to be doing is the very thing that they've done to isolate and intimidate, just to instill fear in him. And definitely this isn't the end. They're still going to come with other tactics and try and crush him as much as they can. But if only we as a Zimbabweans as well could come up together and you know, be following in the footsteps of such people, we could get to where we want to.
Thank you so much for your call, Duncan. Hopewell, I also have another SMS here from a listener who says, soldier on, Mr. Chinono. They're still going to come for you, and they will press even harder. Isolate and intimidate is the tactic. You've already spoken about how these messages of support have actually kept you going.
That's very true. It's important to know that people out there have got your back. Whilst I was in prison, some of the sympathetic prison guards were telling us about what was happening outside, especially the Zimbabwe Lives Matter campaign, and the fact that the South African citizens were pressing on and they were showing solidarity and support for us. It kept us going with my two colleagues, Jacob Ngarivume and the Member of Parliament, Job Scala. It was very comforting to know that there are people out there who understand that what we are doing is for the greater good of the country and all the citizens, and not just ourselves. I could simply retire home, and I've got a very comfortable life. But I think about the future and say, if I don't fight today, what sort of future am I bequeathing to my children, to my grandchildren? What will they say about our generation if we allow the resources that are meant to be shared by all Zimbabweans to be squandered by a crooked and corrupt small group of people?
You know, what your arrest did, Hopewell, is put a spotlight on, once again, the human rights abuses in Zimbabwe and the crackdown on opponents. I would like to hope, Hopewell, that wasn't in vain. I know Pretoria has sent envoys who arrived in the country, and it's another discussion on whether or not they were able to achieve what they were sent there to do. But we've also seen the West speak out against human rights abuses there in Zimbabwe. But one may argue we've been here before. What hope do you have that the recent developments are going to be that catalyst for change?
My feeling is that if the South African government decides to be definitive in resolving the Zimbabwean problem, it will be able to do so. If it stops using the carrot all the time and starts using the stick as well, it will resolve these issues. I mean, history teaches us a lot of things. If you go back to the 1970s, Ian Smith was as intransigent as the current ZANU-PF government, but the then apartheid South African government stood his ground and told him that he had to play ball or he was on his own. The current South African government needs to do the same thing on the ZANU-PF government, because the problems that are being created are created because of things that can be fixed today. It's about constitutionalism. The Zimbabwean government must comply with its own constitution. It should stop looting public funds that are meant for hospitals, that are meant for the poorest of the poor. It should stop stealing money and buying mansions in South Africa. The South Africans have got a very, very strong leverage, because there are a lot of properties bought by crooked Zimbabwean politicians, which are in Johannesburg and in Cape Town. They must account for that. And also the South African citizens, they have started, and they shouldn't stop, you know, putting pressure on their government to make sure that Zimbabwe becomes what it's supposed to be, a powerhouse within the region. Today, we have Zimbabweans running away to all corners of the continent, trying to get a living, simply because we have got an irresponsible government that is not interested in making sure that the lives of its own citizens are in good shape, that does not care about hospitals. Last year, Zimbabwe's main hospitals, the central hospitals, they did not function for 5 months. The government just didn't care, because when they feel sick, the political elites, they go to South Africa, they go to China, they go to Malaysia, they go to India. If they were being treated in Zimbabwe, they would make sure that the hospitals in Zimbabwe are functioning well. So we need to keep putting pressure, and the South African government must do so, and do so unrelenting.
Let's go to Midrand now and welcome Nokutula to the program. Hey, Nox.
Hi, Clement. Thanks for the wonderful show. Hopewell, I just want to say thank you so much. You know, we've had beacons of hope light up up in Zimbabwe sometimes. We've had Pastor Ivan. Now we've got you, who's almost giving us hope that maybe there might be a change. And, you know, we're so sorry. I'm very sorry for what you've had to go through for the rest of us. We are here. I'm here in South Africa, not because I want to be here, but because I see that there's nothing for me in Zim. There's absolutely nothing. We're scattered everywhere. My siblings are everywhere else. Our children don't even know each other. You know, we've been forced to disintegrate. Our family unit has been forced to disintegrate because somehow we still have to survive. Mm-hmm. And I've for a long time felt hopeless against this regime, which uses the force of the military against its own people, which uses punishment against any form of dissent. And, you know, you're brave. Some of us are not brave enough to speak out and say, you know, as much as we may speak out in our own corners and say we're tired of the corruption, we're tired of, you know, not being home, you know. There's a sense of just when you get to Zimbabwe, you're like, I'm home. Mm-hmm. We're tired of being in other people's countries. But we've got no other choice at the moment. And I don't know. For me, I feel so defeated. I don't know if anything is ever going to change, because honestly, we're a very peaceful, loving people. Zimbabweans are, I mean, some people even call us cowards. Maybe we are cowards, I don't know. But we are generally a peace-loving nation. And when with the threat of even a single soldier, we run into our homes, we're scared.
Yeah. Nokutula, thank you. And I'm sorry about, what the decisions that you've been forced to make just to get a better life. Thank you for sharing your story with us and for those words of encouragement for Hopewell. Are you surprised, Hopewell, by how things have turned out with this administration? I remember you had some confidence in Emmerson Mnangagwa and you wanted him to be given a chance when Robert Mugabe was forced out of power. At the time, Mnangagwa was, of course, promising a raft of democratic reforms, including media reforms. But looking at how things have turned out, what are your reflections?
It's a total disappointment because we all thought that things were going to be change. Nobody thought that anyone could be worse than Robert Mugabe. But Emmerson Mnangagwa has just proved us wrong, that indeed he is worse than Robert Mugabe. He promised a lot of reforms. For instance, I am a media man and, you know, I was expecting the media spectrum to have changed. Zimbabwe is the only country on the continent of significance that has only one TV station. Yet in 1960, Zimbabwe and Nigeria were the only two countries in Africa which had television stations. Mm. That's how repressed we have become. South Africa only got television in 1976, but today Zimbabweans rely on South African television and radio stations to hear and understand what's happening in their country. That's how bad this government is. That's how bad they really don't care about the development of the country. They don't care about the advancement of the country. They only care about looting public funds and plundering national resources. And the tragedy is that the only country which has the leverage, which hasn't been using it, is South Africa. Mm. That is why Zimbabweans have again turned to South Africa, hoping that this time President Ramaphosa will use his leverage as the chairperson of the African Union and President South Africa to make sure that at least something can be done. At least Zimbabweans can start to hope again and hope for a better future.
What's next for you? What are you going to be working on? Are you planning on a book? How are you planning on using your story to inspire more Zimbabweans and get them not to give up the fight?
I've been recovering for the past 1 week and I want to write a couple of newspaper articles and get back to exposing corruption, because there's a lot of things that are happening and there's a lot of information that not only myself but a lot of other investigative journalists have got. And we want to get down to work and make sure that we don't just make accusations. We make accusations that are backed up by facts. And that has been why I was thrown into prison, because everything that I've been saying has been backed up by facts. And so I want to carry on with my journalism and to make sure that we give people hope, at least by letting them know what's happening in their country. That's the very least that we can do as journalists. Yeah. And contrary to what the government says, I'm not interested in violence or in any form. I'm simply interested in telling the truth, because that is what my profession requires me to do.
Yeah, look, and we thank you for telling that truth, Hopewell. We thank you for your tenacity. We will also do our part here in South Africa to reflect on these issues and to put the human rights abuses in the spotlight, you know, when the injustice is happening in Zimbabwe. Thank you so much for making time for us, and I wish you a good rest, and I wish you well with the future plans that you have.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
All right, that is Hopewell Chinono, the award-winning Zimbabwean investigative journalist.